But put a chair here. Put a chair. Look. So one of these nice So in Baba's time, he said, put a chair here. Put a chair. For my work. So one of these nice, comfortable, upholstered chair. It had a yellow cover. It is now in the museum in Mehrabad. We put it very carelessly. We regretted it very much afterwards. We put it where we thought it was comfortable, never knowing what was to come. But we put it where we thought it was comfortable, never knowing what was to come. And fine. So Baba did his work by himself. Nobody ever knew or knows what. But then after the work was done, when air should be standing out some distance so to hear it. But then after the work was done, when air should be some distance so to hear his clap and come. And he would tell us after, look, so drained, white, drained, that he said it was just as if a super exhaustion. Anyway, so after the first day's work, Baba said, you see this chair? Nobody is to touch it. You don't know what it will be if you touch it. Well, Baba didn't want us to touch the chair. Now, the room is not that big. Baba's bed is here. Like in the bedroom here, it's not just his bedroom, it's his room. So Baba would sit on the bed. There would be the cushion underneath so that his feet would rest on it. And we'd bring up a folding table in front so Baba could have his meal there. Mara would see that Baba's hands were washed. Each of us doing things like that. Mara supervising. And I would sit there with my book ready to read out, erect out, or whatever that Baba wanted at the time. So now, with this chair there, the moment Baba would call us, we'd rush into the room. Well, as you got into the room, there was the chair. Now, of course, it had a very voluminous skirt on, a long petticoat thing on. And so when she came in, the skirt brushed against the chair, just brushed it. None of us was aware, and Baba turned around, eyes flashing. He said, do you know what you escaped by a fraction of them? By a fraction? Never, never see this, should it happen again. None of you should touch that chair. So then what do you think happened? And it was not to be shifted. We drew a line around it. Then we brought out, what do you call those things that you have over a door in palatial homes from which the curtains hang? A palace? No. That's right. So we took that out from the door and put it around the chair as a safety. So, in fact, the moment we'd enter the chair, we wouldn't think of Baba. We'd say, chair. Oh, the chair. Oh, we haven't touched the chair. You know, our meditation was more on the chair than on Baba at that time. Anyway, when all that work was done, Mara was allowed to clean the chair once in a while. But none of us were to touch it. After the work was done and everything was over, Baba said, my work is done to my satisfaction and about 4 days left. So now we're ready. We can make noise. We can pack and we can be normal. We can be, and the men could go out and cut their hair and all that. And Baba says, I want you to go out shopping. Oh, you wouldn't believe it. We groaned to ourselves, shopping. We have to pack. We have to do this. This too. We don't know what to shop anyway. No, Baba said, go shop. So we went. At last, you see, when Baba would tell you to do something, to please him, when you make the effort, you soon find that you like it. Once you make that effort, you're in it. And you're in it and you really enjoy it. I've often seen, even when Baba would say, go to the pictures, I'd say, oh no, I'm in the middle of the family letter and this has to be done and that has to be done and who wants to go to the pictures? But Baba wants it, so you did it. Once we did it, we'd get in the mood for it and it would be a real outing. So we went and Mara started getting things for other people. Oh, this brooch must be nice for so-and-so. Don't you think Alu Kambata would like this material for a dress? And we were all getting things for each other and for others. And Baba wasn't pleased when we came home. And Mara realized that. I said, Mara, this didn't work out. So Baba said, go back. I wanted you to shop. And not just 5, 10, 15 rupees. I wanted to shop. But he wouldn't tell us what. Again, we went out. This is becoming a big thing. This is a... So, in the end, it came with a solution. A machine. A sewing machine. Which we could all sew things on. Baba's things, our things. And it's expensive. It's in hundreds, not in tens. And we will be... Or all be able to use it and find. So we went and got it. I don't think Baba was too pleased with that. I think he wanted each of us to have something very special, but he said that was all right. It was fine. And then after that, when Baba dropped his body, we began looking after this machine so well that that's another job. We're hardly sewing on it, you know. Oh, you scratched the top. You've broken the needle. This is... So it's a museum piece somewhere around Mehrazad, which we look at with love and greet. Oh, yes. So I was going back to jokes. This is one of the jokes I told Baba, and he enjoyed it. This is a joke about a Red Indian and their memory. You know, they have a fantastic memory. Or had, maybe the modern generation hadn't. One day, this American goes to the farm where the Red Indian is, and he gets out of his big Mercedes, or his Cadillac better?
No, Mercedes.
With a big cigar in his mouth, and, you know, very friendly, very happy, goes along, goes see the Red Indian, and he knows that they have a very good memory, but he doesn't know how to greet them. He says to him, how do you do? And he talks to him. And he says, well, what do you have for breakfast? What do you have for, you know, how do you live? What do you do? What do you eat? So they came to the point when he was asked, what do you have for breakfast? And the Red Indian solemnly said, eggs. At that time, the American was called away for some other work, and he drove away, and that was the end of the interview. 3 years later, the American comes on the same scene and happens to see the same man, but by now he's learned how to greet a Red Indian. He sees him and says, how? And the Red Indian says, scrambled. Baba laughed.
That sounds a bit like another joke about what is nice, you know?
You know, Baba used to do that in Manzil Amin in Bombay, those early years, that first training. The followers, the disciples, would be nervous. They never knew what was going to come on the board, what Baba was going to write next. So early in the morning, they'd come down and to see, they'd all gather first thing. Well, what's he written? It may be, I don't want you to do this, or... Now, instead of getting up at 5, I wanted to get up at 4:30, or instead of 4, I wanted to get up at 3, or whatever, you see. But they thought, well, one day it may say, get out of here, and I don't want to see any of you. They never knew. But Baba could become so formal when he wasn't very pleased. So what had happened was, this was also teaching them that no order of Baba is too small, that it can be neglected, that it can be bypassed. So Baba had given them the order not to sit on the floor direct without something underneath. And Baba had also given them the order that when I call you, come immediately. Now, you see, this is a kind of order which is very difficult to want to observe always, because it's for your convenience. Oh, who cares for me? Why do I want to be so comfortable? Baba's calling me. I should go there first. But no, I should remember, but Baba wants me to be on that. It's Baba's order. Even if it's for my comfort, it's overlapped by the fact that it's Baba's order. So anyway, suddenly Bande Baba called them. Soon after giving this order, he said, everybody come. They ran. And one or two even remembered, but they said, oh, who cares what we sit on, as long as we're with Baba. So Baba didn't say a word. He let them all sit. Everything went fine. They went away. In the morning when they came down to see what's on the board. And Baba had written something to the effect, I regret to inform you that all my mandali, everyone broke my order regarding not having something to sit on when in my presence or something. So then they were saying, what should we do? This or this? But I love that. I regret to inform you.
Giovanni, last time I was here, I asked Pendu that one of the hardest things to put together in your mind, not having been with Baba, is how in those early days they avoided being terrified of him. And because it seemed he kept them on edge so much. And I don't think Pendu understood the question, because he would say Baba was so loving, and yet there would be these...
Yeah.
And I kept wondering, well, how did this love show itself? Were there little things that showed people that they were loved personally by him that kept them going?
You see, you will see some of that in Ramju's diary. You see, Baba, characteristically kind, love. He is love. It's like the whole canvas is that. So then the things that they underwent with Baba, they were not bound to do it. Their only desire, like ours when we came to Baba, only desire was to be allowed to be with him. So you can imagine for yourself what it must be that although these things were sometimes practically impossible, why we still wanted to be. Because Baba's kindness and love covered it all. It, as I said, was characteristic of him. You could not separate it. When we made a mistake on these little orders, as I talk about, Baba's forgiveness was an experience. It made you feel, it made you feel that it was worth all that you had to go through, because Baba would be stern for that. But afterwards, when he said, all right, I forgive, and Baba's forgiveness was like an ocean. It would come over and it would wipe out all that was there. Wipe out. There would not be a trace left. So you see, because of his love that surrounded it, that permeated it, that held it, that sustained it, that composed it. So those, as I say, there were times, it was no joke. Being with Baba, living with Baba, was no joke. But he didn't want to do anything else. And always then, this egged you on to try more, to try better. Even now, the only sadness for these times that I feel is not that it was difficult, but, oh, why wasn't it done always a little more graciously? This could have been a little more happily. Because when you're doing something for Baba, do it happily, or don't do it at all. As I say, if he's the mighty beloved, he deserves mighty lovers. Someday, sometime, by his grace. And there would be so much humor. As Baba himself said, I lost everything when I became God. But he says, thank God I didn't lose my sense of humor. And that is very important, you know, that carries one through. Yes.
How did you handle fear?
No, there was never fear with Baba. We loved Baba. Because you love Baba, you want to please him.
But I mean fear in worldly situations.
Oh, worldly situations. I was answering... You see, we went terrified in that fear kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's obvious that you weren't.
Laura
has grown up about the, I don't know, they're very amusing stories. In retrospect, they're very sober also of all these cases where people were suddenly corrected or something. There was a sudden turnaround. And it's that, so, I mean, I always presuppose that backdrop of love that you talk about.
Yeah. You must have heard Mara, some of you say, how when they were sent off, that's the one thing we feared. Out you go, said Baba. Baba was really angry, that divine robber. Get out. I don't want to see any of you. So you don't argue with Baba. They just, and they had their bundles and little bedding on their heads and walked. They'd barely gone some number of yards, and somebody was sent, call them back. It was over. But
Mommy, did you ever, did that ever happen for men and the women? You thought that was real? Did every time that happened, is that really it? Or did you sort of half like, well, soon you'll call us back or something, you know?
Well, one never knew. One never knew. One never knew. But one knew the innate love and kindness that is God in human form. I'll give you an instance of how Baba's kindness and love. I'll give you an instance of things that happened between Baba and Mother once. Mother had certain privileges, being a mother. She had been through a tremendous amount of harassment from our community, Zoroastrian community, mostly Iranis, because she was Baba's mother. This is a long story. I won't go through that. The times when she would come to be with Baba, always, every few months, whenever I had a holiday, for instance, or even in between, so she would come with me, and she would bring me to be with Baba. All my holidays were spent with Baba. Long holidays in the convent, summer and winter. So once, and sometimes if they wanted something said to Baba, they would tell Mother. And sure enough, Mother would go and tell Baba. And that was all right. Something that the others couldn't dare, they would tell Mother to do it. Now, one day what happened, we had come from Pune. It was my holiday. And I tell you, I understand your feelings sometimes about Ahmednagar, because to me, Ahmednagar was heaven. So was Nasik, because I was with Baba in Nasik for a long time, too. But Ahmednagar, when you came from Pune in the train, and even the train wheel seemed to say, Baba, 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 Baba. And then when Ahmednagar came, you saw this big, big tank, water tank, and written on it, Ahmednagar, the thrill that you've come home. And then Mother and I would go in a tonga to Mehrabad. Baba would send a tonga and we'd go in. So this time what had happened was I was just all joy. I would think of nothing. Wherever Baba was, I'd want to be. If he was with the men, I'd go there. If he was with the women, I'd be there. And I was in heaven. Nothing could disturb or mar my happiness. So Baba was seated. The men mandali were there. The women were the side. And I think there was a singing program or some happy occasion. I don't quite remember what was being done, but it was a happy occasion, and all were gathered. And I was here, oh, fine, this is heaven. And suddenly, I realized I was sensible of a sudden silence, and not only a silence, but it was heavy. It was unexpected. And I looked at the mandali and the lovers, and what happened? And they were all like that. And then I suddenly realized that it was between Mother and Baba. Some spark had flown. And I don't remember what it was. And suddenly I heard Mother stand up and say, very dignified. And she said, well, Merok, she said to her son, if that's the way it is, I leave. And Baba said, all right, leave. And everybody was stunned. I mean, Baba would always be very special with Mother. You know, she had privileges, as I say. And Baba was very concerned about Mother and other little things. And here, everybody couldn't believe it. The stunned silence. Baba said, all right, leave. Mother couldn't believe it either. He wasn't silent. I think so. I was about 7, 8. I think so. And so Mother, conscious of every eye on her, an absolute silence, she started walking away. Few steps, and then she turned around and said to him, and I'll take my daughter with me. And he said, eyes flashing, take your daughter with you. Oh. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my world was coming to an end, crumbling right before me. And so my mother said, "Come, money," and walked ahead. And I didn't follow. I had to have orders from Baba. So I looked at him. I thought maybe he will say, "Don't go." And he looked at me, said, "What are you doing here? Get up, go." So I turned, and I followed Mother. And we walked, and we walked, on and on. And there didn't used to be traffic or pedestrians or huts or things away from Mehrabad on the way toward Ahmednagar. I suppose she thought she was going to walk all the miles to the railway station. It was absolutely barren, isolated, you know, in the wilderness, it sort of it seemed. And she walked, and I walked, and I kept grumbling behind her. "Why did you have to do that? I don't even know what happened. And, I mean, everything is spoiled now. Did you have to say that? Why did you have to get up and go?" And poor mother, she had her own thing, and she had to listen to this going on. We walked, and we walked, and at last, she was tired. She sat under this big banyan tree. And I still kept saying, "Why did you have to come away? Now what's going to happen?" And then she said to me, she said, "Mani, if you want to go, go. But leave me alone." Ah, that's all I wanted. I was supposed to listen to Mother. You know, obey Mother. And Mother says, "Go. If you want to go, go." And I certainly want to go, so I can go. So I turned around. I was a child. And there I was determinedly walking back the miles that I'd walked with Mother. And I walked some, and I was going on, and still a bit scared. It was all alone, and I didn't know what was happening. But I was determined to get back to Baba, and I also felt for Mother. So I walked some distance, and then way in the distance, because it's a straight road, I saw a speck of white, like a white light. And I saw, as I walked, the light grew. And I realized suddenly that it's Baba. Baba's coming. Baba in a sudra and in sandals. And when Baba walked, and the hair going like that when he walked. And that Baba's walk, you can never describe. You may have seen some of it in films. Baba just gliding towards me. The moment I realized and I saw that it's Baba, I started running. Run! And I ran. And he was coming fast. And I just collapsed in his arm. He bent down and gathered me and sort of caressed my cheek and said, "What is it? What's the matter? What?" And I said, "Everything's wrong. Everything." And I started crying. And he said to me, "Don't cry. Everything will be all right." So then he stands up. And I turn again because he's going towards Mother. And I'm amazed even at the time, how come Baba is alone? He never would walk alone. There would be one of the mandali with him. How come he's alone? Years later, I learned that they got up to follow, and he turned around and says, "No one is to come with me. I'm going alone." So anyway, so Baba and I turned back, and I had a habit of catching Baba's little finger, like I used to do with my father when walking. So I got hold of his little finger, and we were both walking back to Mother. That was quite some distance, too. In order to keep time with his footsteps, because I was a child, my footsteps were small, not to step on him, to keep up in time on his feet. So I had to keep looking down at his feet. And on his feet were the sandals that you see in the museum, those very worn, old sandals. Whenever I see those sandals, I see Baba's feet. I'm back to 7 years old, back walking with him as I did this. So then we walked and we walked and we walked. And there was Mother. And not a word was said, either by Mother or any gesture from Baba. He just bent down, gave his hands to Mother. Mother put her hands in his. He helped her up, embraced her. And then we three turned round and walked back to Mehrabad. Now all was well with the world. All right in heaven. Everything fine. And the three of us now walked back to Mehrabad. And the function was as if it had just been disturbed for a while. They were all seated there exactly as they were left. And everybody's faces broke into smiles and all happy. Yeah. Yeah. If only we remember it. Mother at this time was in Bombay, this for the purpose of my story that I'm relating. Mother was in Bombay. She disliked Bombay. She never liked Bombay. She liked Pune. And for Pune in Parsi, in the Gujarati language, we say Pune. So she would say, Pune, best nu kunu, is a corner of heaven. Pune is a corner of heaven. She even told her son, she told Baba, which in itself shows how she accepted Baba. Once she stopped fighting with the world about her son, with Upasani Maharaj and Baba Jan, when she gave him up to the world, she accepted him for what he is. And she said to him, she said, you know, Meryl, I remember somebody said that a time will come when you're going to finish up everything and that Bombay is going to be finished and Pune and this and that. Well, I want you to know that if ever you do anything to Pune, if anything has to be done to Pune, see, it's done by water, not by fire. You know, I don't like fire. I don't. And Baba solemnly said, yes, I remember. I remember. So, Mother didn't like Bombay. Mother was only born in India. She was conceived in Iran, and just a few days after she came to India, she was born. But as I said, she always disliked Bombay. But she had to be in Bombay at this particular time for a year. I forget. I don't know. So this flat was rented in the Parsi colony in Bombay, which means in this block there were only Parsis, Zoroastrians. Now, none of them could understand Baba. The Zoroastrian community was strong, a block against Baba, especially the ones in Pune, who we referred to as the opposition group. Of course, years later, we have seen their grandchildren, their daughters-in-law, their nieces, their nephews, singing Baba's Jai, in fact, more in the forefront than anybody. But this, at the time that I'm talking about, it was not so. It was very difficult, very difficult. So Mother was in this Parsi colony in Bombay, in this block of Parsi flats. And Baba used to visit her sometimes, and Baba would take some of the Mandali with him, like Gustaji, Vishnu, Ramju, Hindus, Mohammedans, that sort of thing. And the rest of the neighbors, I mean, the others in the flats, who's this Mayor Baba? Who does he think he is? And they were wanting to protest, and they didn't know what to do, and they were harassing Mother. They'd even bang on the wall at night. And she knew. She was very intelligent. And it hurt her, because what has my son done to them? Why do they do that to me? So then, now the biggest protest came one day when they all went to the landlord. In those days, it was very easy to get other houses and flats. In fact, it was the landlord who would say, please don't leave. Now, if the landlord says, please leave, and you will not budge. So the landlord came to my mother and said, Shirin Mai, I really am very sorry to have to say what I'm saying, but could you please leave and go somewhere else? I myself will find you a house, you know, because the rest of the tenants say that it's either you or them. And that if you don't leave, they will all leave. And my mother was very incensed, and she said, will you give me one single reason why I should leave? And he said, no, there's not a single reason. You're a model tenant, because my mother would be very law-abiding, almost to the point of being scared of anything that could be even construed as against the law, things like that. And you pay your rent even before time. There's never any disturbance or noise from your flat. You're an ideal tenant. But what am I to do, Shirin Bhai? Please help me. Mother said, that's your problem. I am not leaving because they asked me to, unless it is something that I've done, which I'm made aware of. No, she wouldn't. So, but he said, they all want to leave. All right. So there used to be two tenants who were nice to Mother, in the sense that when they came down from upstairs, if Mother happened to be at the door, there'd be a civil greeting. Good morning, how do you do, how do you do, thank you. The rest, of course, they'd turn their heads. They'd always, of course, look through keyholes and here and there. Is that Mayor Baba in there? Has he come? And my mother said, but he's my son, she told the landlord. Cannot my son visit his mother, his family? He says, but you see, the others, there's the Mohammedans and then there's the Hindus. And so what, said Mother, they're his friends. Who am I to debar my son from entering his own house? Anyway, she didn't do it. So they all signed a petition. Every one of them signed their names, the ones who wanted her to leave, except the three. There were three who were nice to her. And the only contact was a civil greeting when they met. And they said, why should we stop? The lady has done nothing to us. Why not should we have anybody go out? But the others all signed. It was a long list. And Mother, it would hurt Mother. She couldn't ignore it. And we would say, my brothers would say, but Mother, I mean, don't pay attention. Don't ignore them. I mean, this Baba's great. How does it hurt him? But she said, what has it done to them? Why do they do that? 3 months later, every one of those who had signed had to leave. Some personal reason or another. One lost his job. The other had to, one of the husband or wife died. Some had news of death from other parts of the country. Each one, little by little, within 3 months, except the three who hadn't signed, there was not a single tenant in that block. And then he said, see, Mother? Okay, my famous joke. What's the time? Before. Huh? You were here on Christmas?
No.
You were not here at Christmas, Conrad. Then I will... it was Christmas, yeah. Well, you see, this joke is related to servants. Servants in India. You know, Indian homes are lucky to employ servants who are mostly from the villages. Some are little educated, others are not. But they seek jobs, and they get, especially the Parsis and the Christians, employ the servants to help them in their work, and they're very nice to their servants, too. Now, in this time, it's very it's getting more and more difficult to get servants, and especially good servants. So when somebody comes to meet you, greet you, one family goes to another, one of the first things they do is when they sight a servant is to look and wonder. They won't ask you, how are you? I've come to meet you. The first word will be, oh, where did you get that servant from? Where did you get that girl from? Is my niece said that she had a very nice servant, a Christian girl. She used to work very nice. She was clean, tidy. And so when somebody visited her, she said, oh, what a nice girl you have working for you. She's so nice. She does this, and she's clean, and you know, she's good-natured, and this and that. Within a week, that girl had left. The lady who had come to see my niece had, of course, given her a few rupees more or enticed her, and she'd gone. After that, so now what my niece now does, she has a very nice girl working for her, and so anybody comes, she says, oh, that's what you think. She looks nice, but boy, you don't know how I put up with her. And she's so nimble of hands. Oh, yes. So she still has that servant. She's still has that. Rusi Pop, Dr. Goher's Pop, and Katie's Pop. She's always been known as Pop. His house in Ahmednagar, you must have heard of it. Vesta and the others, Baba lovers, used to stay in that house after he died. So he gave shelter to two boys from the village who were studying in college. So he would let them sleep on the veranda and be there. So when people would go to see Pop, how are you, Pop? They would go and see, say, Pop, who were those two boys that just went? I mean, are they your servants? Where did you get them from? And he would grumble. He said, yeah, you people come. You don't come to see an old man. You don't come and ask about my health. All you want to come and see is these, but they're not my servants. These are the sins. So then, now the story starts, having given you a background of the idea of how the situation about servants is in India. So this man, this Indian, goes to see his friend after quite some time. He's made welcome, and the two men sit and are talking together, and the host claps his hand, and Raju enters, not Vilus, another one. The servant enters, says, go bring a Coca-Cola, orange. So the moment the servant enters, the friend keeps looking at him. And fascinated, mesmerized, hypnotized. And when he goes to get the Coca-Cola, he turns to his friend and says, "Hey, you got such a good servant. Where did you get him from? What a fine servant." "Ha," says the man, "fine servant. You don't know what you're talking about. Boy, if you only knew that servant of mine. He's a donkey, I tell you. An absolute total donkey." "Oh, come, come," he says. The other one says, "You, he is so nice. I can see that at an instant. If you're talking of donkeys, you should see my servant. He's the father of a donkey." "What? Yeah, you. Oh, no, it couldn't be. You don't know my servant. Well, you don't know mine. I tell you, it's obvious." "Okay, all right. I'll prove." So when the Coca-Cola is put, he says, "Raju."
"Yes, sir."
"Raju. Here, take this 1 rupee. Go to the bazaar.
Achadi.
And get me a car. Ambassador car."
Hazur, both acha.
And he goes with the rupee to the bazaar to get an ambassador. And that one turns to the other one and says, see? They both laugh and they laugh. Funny. He says, I still maintain that my servant is the father of a donkey. What do you mean? Oh, come on. Come over to my house. So, this is not far away, then, maybe they come over there. That one claps. "Babu."
"Ji, Hazur. Aya, Hazur."
"Babu, you go to my office, Babu."
Ji.
"Go to my office and see if I'm there."
Bahut acha.
See? Yeah. Now what happens? Both the servants are going on their errands, and they meet suddenly because there's a rainfall. So they take shelter under the eave of a wall of a house. The other one also happens to come there. They look at each other. "Hey, where are you going?" What to say? "My boss, I tell you, he's a donkey." "What do you mean he's a donkey?" "You don't know my boss. My boss is the father of a donkey." "You don't know what my boss has done. I'll tell you what. You won't believe. He gives me a rupee." "I tell you. Oh, I can't go on. This is very funny. He gives me a rupee." Yes, go on. "What happened?" "He tells me, go to the bazaar and get me an ambassador car. And he doesn't know this Sunday and the shops are closed." So they laugh. And then he said, "So you say now?" He said, yes. "But my boss is the father of a donkey. Still I maintain." "Why, what did your boss do?"
"He tells me, Babu, come here, Babu. I said, "Yeah, I do." "You go to the office," he says to me, "and see if I'm there." He tells me, "See if I'm there." And he has a telephone right next to him. He could have called him. He could have phoned and found out if he's there.
You know, Monty, there's a Jewish version of that joke in America. Two men complaining about
This is about Montgomery.
General
Montgomery. He was on a goodwill mission in the Arabic countries. And you see, in India and in the East, at least this is what I've heard, you always have to have an interpreter. We call it interrupter. And I can vouch for that, because when we were in Guru Prasad in 1969, and Eraj would stand at the mic and say something this long, and some Andhraite had to translate into Telugu, and that Telugu was rad, but it could only go on that long, you see. And Eraj would stare fascinated at the person, sort of, "Did I say all that?" You know, feeling very proud of the fact. Again, he would say something. So it's apt expression, because they're really interrupters. But we don't mean it that way. It's only because you can't pronounce it. Interrupter, this interpreter, this interrupters. So Monty also had an interrupter with him who would translate what he said on this goodwill mission. And the audience was very responsive. Mass of people in front of him. And Monty would say it. And he would say this much. And the interrupter would say this much. And this went on. And he was very happy with the effect of his talk and his friendship. He said, I'll end with a good joke. You know, that would just clinch the whole thing. Show it. Now, this time, the joke is that much. It's a little longer than his usual pieces. It's a pretty long joke, but it's a very good joke. So that now the interrupter translates the joke in a few seconds. In a few seconds. And the audience, the response is terrific. They're roaring with laughter. They're catching their stomachs. They're falling off their chairs. I mean, they're just rolling. And he's mighty pleased. I say, hey, that's great. I'm glad I thought of that and ended it with such a good joke. Wow, that's something. So as they leave, after they leave, he turns around to the interrupter and praises him for what he's done. And he said, well, wait a minute. How did you manage to put that big joke into a few words so effectively? I mean, he said, I told him, now, honorable gentleman telling joke, everybody please laugh.
Money, there's a story about St. Peter and Jesus Christ.
Because how much Peter loved Jesus? But knowing that Jesus loved Peter especially too. So one day I asked Baba. I said, Baba, Jesus had such a love for Peter. And what love Peter bore for Jesus. Why then was he given this role of denying you? And Baba said, that was for my work. I had to sacrifice even one so beloved to me for my work. And Baba said, because he denied me, because it was meant that he should deny me, his repentance was so great that what he was able to accomplish for me was in measure to that repentance. This much repentance, he was able to do. If there was no repentance, Peter would not have been able to do what he did for me afterwards. So this had to be. It causes you pain, he looks at me. How much pain do you think it caused me to have him do that? That he should be the one to deny me, the one who was wholly mine, but for my work I have to do. For my work. How often we've heard that word. Because it's just for work that we see him as man. It used to irritate Erich. One thing used to irritate him more than anything else was when somebody, obviously worthless, was being cocky to Baba or getting away with it, you know? Not respectful or... And these things have happened. So one day, and Baba was being so nice to this person, so over, you know? And I mean, he wasn't worth a stick, that man. We knew it. And yet, you'd see Baba. So in the end, one day he blew up. He said, what have you got to be nice to that snake? That fellow? And Baba said, Erich, for my work. He's going to do this for my work. Not for that, but for my work. And how we have seen, I remember once, when especially this man who fancied himself really something and who was a bit of a swaggering nature. And Erich was there and Baba was there, and this was the... distance from Baba's face. What do you mean? By that time, Eric just couldn't stand it. Put his hand on that behind and pushed and boom, his head down. And I think his head went in a basket of bananas or something. The prasad was there. And Eric felt very good. And Baba says, when that man got up, Baba said, Erich, bow down to him. Apologize for what you did. Mm-hmm. Erich, bend down and put his feet. That put his head on his feet and it bowed down. And then Baba said later, I didn't want you to have anything of his. You know, that was something. So he nullified it by bowing down, you know, ignored it.
During the time of Jesus, he was criticized for befriending Mary Magdalene. Were there instances like that with Baba? And how did Baba deal with that?
Baba forgave. Baba forgave. Baba's forgiveness is so vast we cannot even all, because our vision is limited. But he forgave.
Deal with that.
Baba forgave. Baba always forgave. Baba's forgiveness is so vast.